Order the May session of the San Luis Obispo County Health Commission. And the first thing I'd like to do is to welcome Tracy Del Rio, our new commissioner for the consumer position. Welcome. And I'd like to get approval of the minutes. We all received the minutes. And I'd like to find out, have a motion and a second to approve it. All in favor? Okay. They've been approved. The next part is public comment, and this is where persons desiring to speak on issues other than scheduled items that are within the scope of the interest of the Health Commission to please come forward. Seeing that there is no one, we can get right into the review of community health status report for San Luis Obispo County.
Good evening. I'm Ann McDowell. I'm the epidemiologist for San Luis Obispo County, and I work for the Public Health Department. And as most of you have probably determined, it's sort of a meaty health status report, so I'll try to get through it. If you have questions, I'm happy to stop and dwell on sections, but mostly I'm going to try to go over each section a little bit briefly. Finding it, Gene? Can you all see it on your screens? So this is an annual report. When it first started out, it came out every 2 or 3 years. Then we moved it up to every 2 years, and now we bring it out annually, although the months vary a little bit. A lot of the data in this report comes from state data sources or federal data sources, and sometimes their release varies a bit, so our release tends to fall behind that. The best way to find this online, if you're looking for it, I could give you a really long web address, but if you just Google slow epi data, it's the first link that pops up is our data site at the health agency, and a number of reports are there. So for this report, there's four major sections. There's the community overview, which is a general snapshot of the community. Then there's maternal, child, adolescent health, communicable infectious disease, and the leading causes of illness, injury, or death. So we'll jump right into the community profile. And this is our population estimations. As you know, the 2010 census figures have just come out. They put us, normally our estimates are provided by the California Department of Finance. They're pretty good, actually. I think they came out about 3,000 different between what the California Department of Finance thought we had for population and what the census thought. We're right around 270,000 right now as of 2010. The age distribution of our residents, as I was just talking about with Mr. Arnold, we have a higher preponderance of an elderly population if you look at it. If you look in the sort of the prime wage earning years, say in the 35 to 54, those two age categories, we actually lag a little bit behind the rest of California as far as our age distribution. One of the reasons that's important when you think about health is because when you're employed in that bracket, then you are guaranteed health insurance. So if we don't have a lot of those people of that age group that are employed in our county, then we don't have as high a group that are insured. Instead, this tends to run higher towards the retirement community. This graph should be no surprise as to where unemployment's been headed for the last few years. But our unemployment rate still runs a little bit below that of California, which is good to see. I'm sorry for the black borders on this. I had trouble with it. When you look, this is our groups below uninsured and at or below poverty, you can see that we run, right about neck and neck. There's not a real big statistical difference between 13.6 and 13.2. And when you're under 18, however, we have a much lower percentage of people below poverty, which is good news. And when you look at our insurance, or our uninsured, I should say, the picture is not quite so bright. In education, obviously the beginning of the graph, the people who have a low education were lower than California because we have a higher percentage of people who have high school graduates and some college That's very good to see, an associate's degree, and we're about neck and neck with bachelor's and advanced degrees. So generally, we have a well-educated population, which is good news. In high school graduation rates, we rank well above California in the percentage of people that were getting through high school or their high school equivalency. This doesn't just mean high school. It also means getting a high school equivalency. One unfortunate piece of news for San Luis Obispo County is we are the third least affordable housing market in the United States, ranked below New York and San Francisco. So that's pretty unfortunate when you think about it. And only 27% of people, or 20% of 7% of households, were able to afford the median home price in our county. That is a quick brush on our community snapshot. Now we're going to go move on to maternal and child health. So this is prenatal care, and this is pretty much what a woman receives between the time she gets pregnant and the time she delivers. And as you can see, a couple of measures look at this. The percentage of mothers who receive a prenatal care in the first trimester. This is very important to get mothers into prenatal care in their first trimester to make sure they stay healthy throughout their pregnancy. And adequate care, apparently, my mouth is tired today. Measured by people who start getting their prenatal care and they continue to use it. So we want to make sure that even when they start getting prenatal care, women continue to receive it throughout their pregnancies. So unfortunately, we rank a little bit below in timely prenatal care. So the women in our county aren't entering prenatal care quite as frequently in the first trimester as the rest of California. And we're a little below in adequacy as well. So since part of adequacy is measured by initiation, then that sort of carries on over. The general fertility rate, this is the number of live births. We have a lower general fertility rate than California, so we have fewer babies being born to this group. And you can see there's a vast discrepancy ethnic-wise. For non-Hispanic whites, we're at 46.1, while the fertility rate for Hispanics was 78.7. So clearly here's a difference in our rates by ethnicity. For breastfeeding, the good news is this is breastfeeding initiation. Now, we can measure this by hospital visits or women, infants, and children program, different measures. We can't always measure how long women continue to breastfeed. So this is mostly just measuring the women who start breastfeeding and say they're going to do it as long as they can. And we have higher rates than California as a whole. Teen births, I break this out into two groups because the 15 to 17-year-olds is what the teen births that probably shouldn't be having babies when you're still in the school range. 18 to 19 years old, though, although you're a teenager, you're considered an adult, so your pregnancy is considered more appropriate at that time. So we have a lower rate in San Luis Obispo County for the 15 to 17-year-olds. That's very good. And we have a much lower rate for 18 to 19-year-olds than the rest of California. Yes.
I'm sure there's a very small number, but I just wondered why you didn't report anything for under 15.
The number of births for girls who are under 15 ranges between 1 and 3 each year, so you can't get a statistically reliable rate from that number.
Yeah, thank you.
So, and this is low birth weight. Low birth weight babies can come for a number of reasons, and generally there's a lot of expense associated with them, and you know this is the reason you want to get your women into prenatal care so that they can take really good care of themselves and the baby, carry the baby to full term, and not have some problems that come along with low birth weight. The good news is we're meeting our Healthy People 2010 objectives that we're not meeting our Healthy People 2010 objectives. I'm having a tough time today. But we are better than the state of California. So, but infant mortality, the good news is even though we're slightly above healthy people 2010, we are pretty good at infant mortality, and the infant mortality is the number of babies who die between birth and 365 days. We haven't met the healthy people of goal of 4.5 infant deaths per 1,000 live births, but the rates are statistically unreliable once again, which just means that we have so few deaths in that age group that we can't really say what the rate truly is and come up with a good number. So childhood immunizations, we lag behind the state in childhood immunizations, and we are above the state in personal belief exemptions, which is part of the reason that we lag behind the state in the rest of childhood immunizations, unfortunately. But as I'm sure you all know, we've been really emphasizing childhood immunizations, especially in the pertussis category in the last year or two, since we had such a huge outbreak recently. We're already up to communicable diseases. Okay. So there are about 80 diseases in California that are legally required to be reported by healthcare providers to the public health department, and then we in turn turn around and report these to the state. I can assure you that that many of the diseases that physicians are required to report, they do not. Rates vary. You get about 100% reporting on something like tuberculosis because there's such a recognized public health impact. But there are other diseases out there that either aren't recognized or people just don't bother to report them because they don't feel that it's that important. They don't have a lot of reasons to do the paperwork. But of the diseases that are reported, the most frequently reported disease is chronic hepatitis C. However, the majority of these cases are in the incarcerated population. So I do break it out by community and institutionalized populations because especially for hepatitis and for HIV and AIDS, the rates are very, very different between our institutionalized populations and our community populations. Unfortunately, the second most reported disease is chlamydia. And as I said, we had a very large outbreak of pertussis in 2010, so it leaped up to number three, but normally it's valley fever or coccidioidomycosis. Here's our HIV and AIDS numbers. This is AIDS incidence. Now, I do want to differentiate a couple things here. I don't report really on the number of people who are in the AIDS Support Network care system or receiving services through the AIDS Support Network. They have received a sharp increase in numbers, but those are a lot of people that move to our county from other areas and need services that are provided to people with HIV and AIDS. But the incidence among our county population is fairly low. Even though chlamydia is our number two reported disease of all time, we are significantly better than California. It's a very widespread problem. And gonorrhea shows a very similar trend. And syphilis, we have almost no cases, to be honest. But this is primary and secondary syphilis only. So these are newly acquired cases of syphilis. We don't calculate the rates of syphilis for people who are found to have late syphilis or late latent syphilis, which is years after you've contracted it and it went undetected, you have antibodies to it, you still get treated, but it's not considered a new infection, so we don't track those numbers. So hepatitis, these are the numbers of hepatitis. If you look at hepatitis C, I think you can see the problem. Back in 2000, there were 256 reported cases. I don't know what happened to the 2010 numbers there. But looks like they, for some reason, got kind of squished in there. Let's see if I can. That number is 856, but I believe that that doesn't count a number of cases that were reported in 2011 who were detected in 2010. But sometimes what happens is, especially with hepatitis C, because the majority of the cases are reported through the prison system, what will happen is they'll do batch reporting, and so they'll hold on to them for a couple months, and then they'll send us a big batch, comes in, and then we process it as best we can, and so there was a bit of a lag in 2010. But as I was saying, in 2000, there were 256 cases. We now have, 2009, we hit a high of 1,137 cases, and the numbers are pretty much just going to keep getting worse. Yes?
So what are, this includes the incarcerated and the Slo County population?
Yeah, I think my next slide,
okay.
But I think my next slide sort of breaks it out and shows you where the majority of the cases are coming from. And there you have it. So 30% of the cases of chronic hepatitis C that are detected are in our community population, which leaves the other 70% coming from our institutionalized population. That includes both ASH and CMC.
Are these, are these new people moving into the county and or people who've just found out they've contracted it?
So this is chronic hepatitis C. We actually detect very few acute cases of hepatitis C. But the chronic cases are when they're detected, and they might be detected for a number of reasons. So if they've been reported somewhere else, we try not to report them. It's only the people that are newly diagnosed as a chronic hepatitis C person that we report. And so in the prison population as well, though, there's a large transient population in the prison. I mean, the people move around a lot, and they might get tested at different times at different prisons to see, but they just send them all to us and we report them.
Are they tested at the county jail?
Not as a routine thing. It's not like you go to jail, get a test.
Okay, so they're not part of the incarcerated population that we see here.
No. They're considered our community population. They're a local population going to a local jail. The incarcerated is really just the CMC in ASH. Tuberculosis. We didn't meet the Healthy People 2010 objective of one case per 100,000, and I think that's because we had three cases in 2009 and something very similar in 2010. So because our population is under 300,000, if you hit three cases of tuberculosis, you've gone over the Healthy People 2010 goals. So it's with our low population, it can be a little difficult to meet that particular goal. But the good news is when we find somebody who has tuberculosis, we give them complete curative therapy. In other words, we make sure that they take all the drugs for the length of time you need to take them to make sure that they're cured and they're not going to have, end up 3 years, 5 years down the road with a drug-resistant form of TB. And our rates are much lower than California.
And how do you do that? How do you ensure it that they take?
Tuberculosis control is very intensive. I mean, and the good news is with only three cases, we can, we can really follow up with these people, but there's something called daily observed therapy that we pretty much go by. We deliver drugs, either every day or every couple of days to these people, and we follow up with them. We find out where they live. We track them down. We make sure that they're taking their drugs. If they move to another county, we call that other county. We deliver their entire case file to the other county so that they can pick up right where we left off, and all the other counties do the same for us. So tuberculosis is tracked very closely once it's detected. Pneumonia and influenza. So pneumonia and influenza are pretty much inextricably linked, especially in the elderly population. You get a lot of people coming in for pneumonia, and they weren't necessarily diagnosed with influenza, but a lot of times the causative case is influenza. And when you look at hospitalizations in the nation and during the influenza season, when you see diagnosed influenza going up, the pneumonia rate is right there paralleling it. So pneumonia and influenza are sort of hallmarks for each other during seasonal problems. Yes?
excuse me. Are they caused by different organisms? What is the difference here?
Well, there's different types of pneumonia. So for instance, in our particular county, we can have a little bit of a confounding factor because of valley fever. So in valley fever endemic regions, they've shown that a very high percentage, actually, of community-acquired pneumonias can be due to valley fever, which is a fungus, so that's a fungal pneumonia. And then influenza is a virus, which is a viral pneumonia, but you can also get bacterial pneumonias. So a lot of times if somebody goes into the hospital with a pneumonia, they'll do their best to figure out, you know, is this, which pneumonia is this? But they'll just treat them as best they can. So if they, you know, they can take washes and swabs to see if there's an organism in there that they can identify as a specific organism to look at. But, I mean, a pneumonia x-ray is a pneumonia x-ray. It's sort of cloudy and doesn't always say I'm this or that. So almost 3% of all hospitalizations in our county are due to pneumonia or influenza with a primary diagnosis. We have about 44 deaths each year due to pneumonia and influenza, and I can tell you as the person that does review all the death certificates in this county that it doesn't always say bacterial pneumonia, viral pneumonia, fungal pneumonia. It just says pneumonia. So when somebody's under a doctor's care and they get a pneumonia and they go downhill in a week or so, then the chance to identify that organization or that organism isn't always there, and they just sign off on the death certificate as a pneumonia. So most of the pneumonia and influenza deaths occur to those greater than 85 years old. And an additional 26% of them between 75 and 84. So that you can see that the vast majority of those 44 deaths are in people 75 years and older. And this is just simply due to the fact that your immune system wears out. Your body is less able to fight off this invasive infection. And we're on to the last section. Leading causes of death, chronic disease, tobacco, and obesity and physical activity. These are the leading causes of death by number in our county. So you can see that cancer is the number one cause of death for chronic disease. Diseases of the heart, cardiac, cerebrovascular disease. Then we have unintentional injuries, chronic lower respiratory. So it just keeps going down lower and lower as you go down. Wanted to talk a little bit about cancer, and this data is not in the health status report, but I know that there's a little bit of interest about cancer. I'll tell you why we don't put a lot of information about cancer in our health status report is cancer is a reportable disease in the state of California, but it's not reportable to the local health department. It's reportable to the cancer registry, and that's the California Cancer Registry. Now, about 7 or 8 years ago, there used to be the Tri-Counties Cancer Registry that was headquartered in the Santa Barbara Public Health Department. And they tracked cancer in San Luis, Santa Barbara, and Ventura. But all that has been centralized now. And so they do a centralized reporting of cancer. So I don't spend a lot of time putting the information here, but I can recommend the California Cancer Registry website. They have just a tremendous website that breaks out rates of cancer by site of cancer. So it's important to understand that all cancer is not equal. The same, obviously, some types of cancer are caused by some factors, other types are caused by other factors. So if we lump, you know, prostate and breast cancer into the same pile, you have a very murky view of who's really getting sick and what's causing it. So if you are interested in a specific type of cancer, the California Cancer Registry just does an excellent job of breaking it out, especially in, does it by our county, the rates of our county versus California. Yes?
I was wondering why they don't report it back to each county, the cancer rates.
They put out, well, like I said, we can go to the California Cancer Registry website and gather data that they put out, and they put out a report, I believe, on an annual basis, but they just don't, you know, drive it back to the county. It's pretty much up to the county to go digging for that information, but it's not very hard to find.
Well, nevertheless, I'm wondering why the system works that way. Why don't they automatically supply the data to counties as they do with most others?
The Tri-Counties Cancer Registry used to send us a pretty comprehensive report on the Tri-County region. But once they centralized the collection of data and the way they reported, we stopped receiving that. So I don't know. My assumption is they were cutting costs. They centralized their control and do what they do.
Is there any other condition or disease that they don't report back to you?
I don't think so. So almost cancer is one of the very few, I think it's the only disease that's only reportable to the state versus the local public health department. We're actually the conduit through which most of our statistics go to the state. So we handle most of the reporting. What? Yeah, everything else is a communicable disease. So I had something to say, but... So I have a few slides here on cancer in our county. So it's got quite a... This is really a great website. So you can see that just by color that we have one of the highest age-adjusted invasive cancer incidents. Now, what age-adjusting means is actually very important for our county because we have a higher number of the elderly population, because a higher percentage of our population is older than the rest of California. Just to say, if we said, how many cases of cancer do you have versus a county that was predominantly younger people, it would look really bad for us. So we do something called age-adjusting the rates, which compares our population as if it were the same as the percentages in the national population. If we had the same percentages of 15 to 24-year-olds and 75 to 84-year-olds as the nation, what would our rate be? And California does the same. So we're really comparing apples to apples. And you can see that we have a higher rate of invasive cancer. That's the bad news. The good news is we have lower rates of people dying of cancer. So we could say that we're finding more of it and we're curing it, and people are not dying of it. So that's actually good news. You can see that we're actually in the second quartile in mortality, whereas we were in the top in incidence. This is breast cancer, and once again, we're looking at incidence and mortality, and incidence is just newly detected cases. So you can see that we have, once again, we're in that third tier as far as incidence of breast cancer. And once again, we're down in the second tier for mortality. So there seems to be a clear trend that we detect it, but people aren't necessarily dying of it in our county. And the same is true, again, for prostate cancer, although we have higher incidence rates than we did of breast cancer. So we have very high incidence rates of prostate cancer in our county. But once again, we're only in that second tier for mortality.
Question?
Yes.
Now, some counties are better at reporting. You said everything funnels through there, so some of the comparisons may be a little skewed.
Well, this is cancer data, so this is every county reporting to the state about cancer. It's more like some physicians are better at reporting than others. So. Yes, you. A lot of these statistics are as good as we can get as far as reporting of diseases. So, you know, we're constantly encouraging physicians to report diseases, and they've done a lot of studies. And really, you know, like I said, with tuberculosis, diseases of high public impact and high visibility really get reported, like 99% of all cases. And things like, you know, I don't know, hospitalized chickenpox, maybe not so much, you know. So there's some that people just kind of go, whatever, I'm not going to report it, you know. So it varies. But what you assume, there's sort of something called bias when you look at statistics. This is called a random bias, which means that it's probably the same everywhere. So you're probably comparing reasonably similar data.
So we're a small county, so sometimes we can see a lot of what's going on. The bigger counties may have more trouble with that. Or is that not true?
Well, if you've ever gone, I've gone to a couple meetings where the LA County Communicable Disease Division showed up about 20 of their people, and I think, oh my goodness, you know, and they left a bunch of them at home. So, I mean, the bigger the counties, you know, the bigger the staff they have to follow up and report on these things. An interesting thing that's happening in most counties in California is we're going to a new disease reporting system. And I think the rates of diseases reported are going to go up because lab data is going to automatically feed into this electronic system. And laboratories, it turns out, are much better at reporting communicable diseases than physicians are or other healthcare providers. So the data, you know, which is automatically in the lab system, is going to start automatically flowing into our system. And then we can go back and say to the physicians, did you want to tell us something about this person who has this positive lab test for this disease? So I think we'll see rates improve over the next couple years of reporting for those diseases that are lab reportable. And we're actually, the system will also have provider portals so that the physicians will actually be entering their own data. Whether or not that makes a difference, I don't know, but we'll see.
I have a question.
Yes.
Okay, I'm asking this as a complete lay person. I don't really have, I'm not basing this on any medical understanding, so I'm asking you. But you're saying that we have generally have higher rates of breast cancer and prostate cancer in this county?
Yes.
And I'm wondering if either of those or both of those types of cancers could be related at all to environmental factors.
So cancer is what we call a multifactorial disease. There's three main reasons for cancer, main causes. There's environmental, there's genetic, and there's lifestyle. So as the cancer epidemiologists have told me many times from the California Cancer Registry, if you have ever smoked, your chances of cancer go up over twofold. Ever smoked, if you smoked for a week when you were 18, it still increases your risk of cancer later on in life. If you've been exposed to secondhand smoke, then your risk of cancer goes up. So that's an environmental factor that we can't control, and it's actually very difficult to measure when you're trying to find out what might have caused a person's cancer. So with the, the multifactorial component of cancers, it's often very hard to figure that out. So, and if we have... if you have people moving here for some reason or another and their cancer is detected, then it's also difficult to say what environmental factors might have caused cancer. If you have somebody who moves here at the age of 50 and is diagnosed with a cancer at the age of 60, well, we don't really know what environmental factors occurred in their lifetimes for the first 50 years versus what they might have been exposed to here in our county in the next 10 years. So environmental factors are very difficult to tease out. So they did a massive study back on the East Coast because breast cancer rates there were so high, and they tried to go through every environmental factor, and they were never able to tease it out. It's just too difficult, which is unfortunate. Yes?
So then the question is, are the rates still high there?
Back on the East Coast?
Yes.
Yes. But breast cancer... breast cancer, this is obviously not the cause of breast cancer, but rates are higher in women of higher socioeconomic status. So what they were looking at in an enclave in the East Coast was a very affluent group of people, and they had higher rates. Now, they're certainly looking to see what is it about high socioeconomic status that causes women to have more breast cancer. Is it that it's getting detected? That's not really they've pretty much ruled that out as a reason, but women get screened more often when you have good medical care and good money to pay for it. But they're looking at it, they're trying to figure out what that is. And we do have, groups of people here who have a very good social economic status. And so perhaps, once again, that's part of the marker of why we have higher rates.
Another one that I have read, you can check me on this, women who are pregnant earlier are less likely to get breast cancer earlier in life, and I'm guessing that these higher income women delayed having children longer than people of lower income levels.
I haven't read any studies on that. I really can't comment on that, but I can see our...
Well, it's not necessarily related to having children earlier. It's the length of time that a woman menstruates. So if you are pregnant for a good portion of your life, or if you have early pregnancies or just happen to have a late menses, all of those things will be protective, or early menopause on the other end. That is, again, unknown as to why per se, but I guess the estrogen effects.
Yeah, something about estrogen, so.
Thank you.
Yeah.
The other thing that comes up to my mind is most of us think of cigarettes. They're the number one thing that we don't have to indulge in that causes cancer, and we think of lung cancer, but I believe It's a factor in cancer in other parts of the body. But, and the one that's come to my attention, of course, is methyl iodide, which is known to cause cancer in the thyroid. And I don't know why that is, but can you think of any others that target a certain area of the body when they cause cancer? Thank you.
Unfortunately, not offhand, but I know that they have detected, you know, links between certain substances and cancers, but off the top of my head, I can't really pull any to mind. I'm sorry. I don't know, Dr. Borenstein, can you?
You're right, Commissioner Arnold, that smoking is, we do tend to think of it as lung cancer, but there are definitely associations with bladder cancer, for one, colorectal cancer, other types of cancer. And there are a host of chemicals that have a propensity for different organs. But again, I wouldn't know.
I was just thinking that, you know, there was a real scientific stunner when they discovered that there was a viral component to cervical cancer, and they were shocked to find out, you know, that a viral infection could later lead to cancer. And so I think the field of cancer research is still wide open for cause and effect, and that we'll be learning a lot more over the years. So chronic disease. We have higher percentage of people reporting heart disease, although it's not statistically significant, arthritis, and asthma. Now, these are not age-adjusted. They're percentages. So with a higher elderly population, some of these could, in fact, be due to the fact that the percentage of population in our county leans more towards the elderly. We have a lower percentage of persons diagnosed with diabetes. Obesity and physical inactivity. The news is not good on obesity in across the nation, obviously, and even in our county. When you think that over 33% of the adults in our nation are considered obese, and 24% of adults in California are obese. So the objectives for healthy people 2010, and if I come back next year, they'll be the healthy people objectives for 2020, but basically we're looking to increase the proportion of adults who are at a healthy weight, reduce the proportion of obese adults to 15%. Obviously, we did not make that goal. And reduce the proportion of children and adolescents who are overweight and obese to 5%. Well, it's sad to say that no state met the goals in 2009. This is kind of a complicated graph. You have to sort of look at it for a few minutes to tease out what it is you're looking at. But you can see that we're looking at overweight and obese. So those are two different categories of people. And you can see that even though we do slightly better in some areas, we do worse in others. So we are slightly, more overweight than California, but we're slightly less obese. So what do you say, Okay, well, that's actually it for the health status report, so I'm happy to take questions. Yes?
I have a question. I have a couple of questions. What struck me in the very beginning of your presentation and looking at the statistics is the percentage of uninsured children in the county and how much it jumped from, I think it's 2.9 to 13.4.
Mm-hmm.
Do we know why that is? Is there something that sticks out that's...
Well, I imagine that the economy is part of it. Let me flip back.
It's on page 2-4, and it doesn't correlate with the total percentage of uninsured comparing with California. That's a big jump.
Yeah, I'm not really sure why that is, but...
Do you know of any correlation between the counties with low vaccination rates and those counties with preventable disease, high preventable disease rates?
Yes, there usually is a correlation. And in some things like pertussis was really a breakthrough disease. In other words, we still had pretty good vaccination rates, but we still just got clobbered by that epidemic here in California. But they are really showing that in areas that have, you know, low measles vaccination, that you're more likely to see a little, you know, outbreak there versus somewhere else. So, yeah, they're correlated.
For those counties, so I understand we were number one in the count, in the state, or if that's the case, of
For the rate of pertussis.
The second in line county, do you know, and the third in line, did they also have low or lower vaccination rates?
So number two was Marin.
Okay.
And I'm not sure of their vaccination rates, quite frankly. The CDC did come to our county, and they've been visiting counties throughout California, and they've been going to physicians' offices, and they've been collecting data on immunization rates specifically for pertussis, and they have not yet released the results of that study. They gave some preliminary results out, but it appears that that was due to waning immunity in certain age groups. So they really dug into pertussis because they want to know why every 3 to 5 years we have an outbreak of, we have increased rates of pertussis. Now, clearly in 2010, it was to the extreme when you have, you know, the rates highest in 50 years. But it's cyclical for pertussis. Every 3 to 5 years, you have higher rates. And so they suspect it's due to waning immunity. So not everything is just vaccination rates. Some of it is the vaccines might not give as much protection as we once thought.
And do you know of anybody or any counties that do something like an environmental toxin inventory? You know, we're so worried about all the toxins that are out there, but we just talk about individual toxins like the methyl iodide and other things, but there's, you know, they're all over the place. And we were talking about breast cancer, and Dr. Bornstein talked about early menses as sometimes being correlated with it, and I think it's discovered that early menses sometimes is stimulated by toxins, and certainly endocrine disruptors in our community. Have you heard of anyone doing an inventory?
Well, so there's a couple of things that I know that are going on in this regard. Our environmental health division, and I think this is true across the state, we do keep an inventory of chemical hazardous materials. The vendors of those products are required to report to us their stocks, and we have that information. We're about to put it online. Also, California is one of the states that has invested in an environmental health tracking program where they're is a lot of effort being made in trying to correlate exposure and quantity of exposure to certain environmental toxins to rates of illness. And that's somewhat in fledgling stages, but it has really taken off in the last decade, an attempt to even do that, as you heard Anne talk about the difficulty of making any kind of cause and effect correlation in individuals. So this is an attempt to look at the population level at those kinds of things. But to my knowledge, there are no there's no red herring as of yet.
Okay. Any other questions on this section? Thank you.
Okay. In the very beginning, when you were talking about Cal Poly, or about the age-related statistics, and then I assume this includes the Cal Poly students?
It does if they've registered themselves as living here in San Luis Obispo County. So that would probably be the older students. You know, most of the freshmen are probably still considered residents of their parents' households, wherever they come from.
And I had a couple questions here. The other one is when you were talking about the least affordable housing in the U.S., do you know if there's any statistics that compares SLO County to New York and San Francisco with what's available in the way of low-income housing?
I have not seen any. That doesn't mean it doesn't exist.
Okay. Last question is when you're talking about the adequacy of prenatal care, what do you mean by adequacy?
So So the adequacy of prenatal care is measured by two things. That's the initiation, so getting started and when you get started, and also by the fact of whether or not you continue all the way through your pregnancy. So it's actually a compilation of two different measures.
Okay. And my other question is regarding hepatitis C testing. I'd been asked recently to try to find opportunities for people to be tested that had never been tested.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out that there's not a lot available for that. Can you address
that? I know that the Slow Hep C Project is really working to make sure that people, if they want to get tested, can get tested. And physicians, if you go to a physician, can order, you know, blood tests to make sure that you get tested. I think that we have, the public health department itself, discontinued its hepatitis C testing program. But there are other venues out there where you can be tested.
It's pretty expensive, is what I was told. It's a really expensive.
I'm not certain what the cost is.
I just wondered. No, and there had been an article I'd seen in the paper recently that maybe this summer there was supposed to be something new coming through that for testing of Hep C that would be less expensive.
I know that there are new treatment regimens that have just come on the market. I'm not aware of new testing methodology.
Okay, maybe that was it. Thank you.
Okay.
Yes.
Thanks for coming out to go over this report for us. I want to jump back to the communicable disease category.
Uh-huh.
And there's one here,
Campylobacter.
Campylobacter, okay. What type of an organism is that, and is that foodborne?
It's foodborne. It comes in your chicken for the most part.
Is it a bacteria?
Yes. So it's generally considered a foodborne illness. It used to be one of the number, I think it was used to be in the top three for all foodborne illnesses, but norovirus has certainly pushed it down the list a bit, but it's still out there.
The other one is cryptosporidiosis.
Yes.
What can you tell me about that?
Do you remember the water slides?
Oh, okay.
So cryptosporidium is a little spore in the water, and they got it at the Mustang water slides, and it made everybody there who went there for about 3 weeks very, very sick with diarrhea and shedding. Once you're in the water, if you have diarrhea, which is why when you go to a public pool, it says, you know, if you have diarrhea, don't get in our pool. Kind of thing. We want you to shower before you get in the pool, all these good things, because it's a fecal into the water and then the water into you. And, once you ingest that contaminated water, you get cryptosporidium, and it's kind of a nasty, miserable disease.
Okay, thank you. And I see malaria is listed here. Now, that must be someone who came in from outside, I'm guessing, or am I wrong?
No, I believe the malaria case was related to the Haitian earthquake. If I recall correctly, somebody went to Haiti to volunteer and help out and came back and was diagnosed with malaria. So, as they say, no good deed shall go unpunished.
Going back to the leading causes of death, I'm sure you have somewhere in your file more details, but, for example, under unintentional injury deaths,
mm-hmm.
We'd want to know how many are auto accidents, how many are unintentional drug overdoses, and so on, so that we target our prevention efforts where they're most needed. So can you give me any type of a breakdown? If not, here later on.
Later on I can do that, yes, but not here off the top of my head.
Yes. Oh, and the same question for all other causes of death. You know, there could be some very strange causes of death. I'm just curious. It does amount to 6%, so there are a few. Let's see, the total number, 103 deaths. So I would be curious to know what all those other causes are.
Okay. I can gather more information.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. I believe I'm next up on the agenda.
Yes, you are.
So I have a very brief presentation on medical board physician survey data, which you might be, at the end of this little teaser, you might say, hey, come back with more. But literally, we've been requesting this data, and they sent us data that was about as worthless as you could get, so we resent the request and we're a little bit more specific. And on Thursday, we got back some data that I've just been able to start delving into. So basically, all this is a little bit of data about the number of physicians in San Luis Obispo County, where they're roughly located, and where primary care physicians are located. And the importance of primary care is that they've really done some studies that show that, you know, when you have the right proportion of primary care physicians to your population, that a lot of your medical costs go down and that it's a very good thing for the population. So we'll just go into this. Oh, I have the clicker. Okay, so where we get this particular data is every 2 years, physicians are required to renew their license. And when they renew their license, they have to fill out a little survey. Now, this does not include data from physicians who are initially becoming licensed in the state of California. So if there is a large pool of physicians in our county that just now got their licenses, this is not going to be included in this data that we have. It's collected by the California Medical Board, and they gave it to us as of 4/25, and in my mind, completely inexplicably, they say they have no data from the past, which is just unbelievable to me. Why would you collect data and then just let it go away? I simply don't understand it. So I guess what I'll do is I'll keep requesting the data every year or so that I keep a current, you know, sort of a trend analysis of what's going on in our physicians. So this is the form that physicians fill out, and that's a pretty fuzzy copy. So I'll pass this down. You can take a look at it. It's just a number of questions that they ask physicians. And there's only a few of them that they must fill out, so some of them come back blank. On the California Medical Board website, they, by county, give the foreign language breakdown and the ethnic background of physicians, and that's the only two questions from this survey that they put on the website, which I'm not quite clear on either, but that's okay. So we requested some data by zip code. Now, what you need to understand is that the physician gets mail or registers at a certain zip code. So it is entirely possible that a physician could be living in Paso Robles and practicing in San Luis Obispo, and they don't have their registered address being the San Luis Obispo address where they practice, but that the mail goes to them in Paso Robles. So we can't really be sure of that. If they don't list their practice location, I mean, the questionnaire is very specific, give us your practice location, but if they leave it blank, then what the medical board does is substitute the mailing address. So if they don't fill out that zip code, then it defaults to their mailing address, which could be where they live. So we requested some data on their zip code, obviously, so we could see where in the county the physicians are, their activities in medicine, whether they're in research, whether they're in patient care, whether they're in administration, their medical practice and specialty. This tells us a little bit of the data I'm going to show you on where primary care physicians are in our county, and some of their training. So this is what we were able to look at. Now, that red area is 0 to 1 physicians. So you can see that there aren't a lot of physicians practicing in California Valley. Interestingly enough, you know, we didn't see any in San Miguel. I think there was none in Creston. So, you know, I think Shandon had one. So a lot of these areas, you know, 0 to 1. These are areas where you don't see a lot of practices for San Luis Obispo County. So this is just their location, basically how many physicians there are in the area. You can, for 2010. So this is I dug a little bit deeper in the few days I had into primary care physicians. And primary care physicians, when I looked at some other studies, they said, you know, they're general internists, they're people in family practice, pediatricians, geriatrics. These people are providing primary care to a large segment of the population. So there's a group, the Commission of Graduate Medical Education, says that to have a good healthy mix, a good, you know, support for your community, you should have between 60 to 80 primary care physicians per 100,000 population. We have 246 primary care physicians in San Luis Obispo out of 738 that registered for license renewal. So 33% of our physicians are primary care physicians. Now, this was, if you looked at that survey, they sort of broke down the number of hours of how often do you do patient care. I think it was 1 to 10, 10 to 20, 20 to 40, more than 40. I thought, ooh. But so we only chose, or I only chose people who were practicing primary care 20 hours a week or more, because if they're doing less than 10 hours a week, they're probably not as big an impact on the community as the people who are at least spending half their time doing it. But it turns out that all of our primary care physicians spend at least 20 hours a week doing patient care. So this is the rate per 100,000, and this goes back to that, you know, supposition that we should have between 60 and 80. So the white, once again, no surprise there. We couldn't really calculate a rate for a number of reasons. One, the census doesn't really break out these areas of our county as, you know, you can't really give a good population estimate unless you map your census tracts to all your zip codes, which is pretty hard to do. So, but for the major metropolitan areas, they'll give you population estimates, and that's what I used here as the basis for the rates. So you can see that most of the areas that have the majority of our population do have over 80 primary care physicians per 100,000 people. I'm sorry that those colors kind of ran together at the bottom. That looks like two shades of yellow, and it looked so much better on my screen. What you can't see is that Paso Robles is 93446. It's kind of a little sandwich right under the big orange blob at the top. They have that high rate of 250 to 441, and then back down in Pismo Beach. Or actually, I think that's Templeton has that high rate. And yeah, it's Templeton. And the reason it's Templeton is I'm fairly certain it's due to the proximity of Twin Cities. So, and then Pismo has another large cluster, but otherwise we seem to be doing pretty well. And that's a summary, because really there wasn't much data to tease out here. And unincorporated rates just couldn't be calculated, I'm sorry to say. So, like I said, if you look at that survey and you see that there's other information that you would like to see, you know, if you want to look at specialties, tease them out. I mean, if cancer is our highest, you know, number one leading cause of death, and probably of interest is, you know, how many people do we have, how many oncologists do we have in the county kind of information. And if you'd like that, I'm certainly happy to go ahead and dig into that data and try and get that for you. This week just couldn't happen, though. So are there any questions?
Yes.
Yes, I have one. Looking in the continuing medical ed hours and also in the medical practice and specialty, nowhere in there did I see addiction as listed as anything that physicians would
specializing in addiction.
Either special, and I know there's people that advertise as addiction specialists.
Can I answer that? addiction is actually not a there are recognized specialties with these two-digit codes, and actually I don't believe addiction right now is a recognized specialty. We get more recognized specialties as we go along, but we just, the last few years, have had pain management be recognized as one of those specialties. But I think, Susan, that's probably why you don't see that. It is right currently is not. And that doesn't mean it's not recognized by their professional association, but just in the whole scheme of numbers, I don't believe it's right now recognized as a specialty in and of itself.
So just to add to that, it's what Commissioner Sage is talking about is the American College on Graduate Medical Education are the ones that have board specialties and then subspecialties, and you have to take certain board exams. There are other national professional associations that provide certification. So ASAM, for instance, Association of Substance Abuse Medicine, I think it is. You can get certification, just not board specialization.
Okay, thanks. I just found it odd that we had pain management on there, but we didn't have addiction.
And just to be clear, this is for physicians only and physician licensure only, and certainly there are other health practitioners in our county besides physicians, so...
And this data would not actually include our physicians that are DOs, does it? Because the California Medical
Board. Yeah, it
board,
does, actually.
Or do they consider the DOs in there?
Yeah.
It's MDs and DOs, but not other, not doctors of optometry or chiropractor or podiatry.
Yeah.
I remember about 10 years ago, I think there was a situation where specialists would come up to San Luis Obispo on a regular basis to treat patients that didn't weren't serviced by those type of specialties. It was a big thing. They came to used to come to French Hospital and treat people, I think, with diabetes and provide services that weren't readily available here. Is that still going on, or do you know what I'm talking about?
Well, I mean, I do know that sometimes specialists do still come up here, but maybe not with as great a frequency. So.
And is that because we're attracting more of those types of specialists here on a more permanent basis, or are our ill commuting to metropolitan areas to get services they can't find here?
You know, the immigration of doctors is not really my specialty. I don't.
Sorry.
I have a question. You did not include OBGYNs in the primary care physicians.
No, I did not.
Is there a reason for that?
It goes to preference. Yes, OBGYNs are sometimes the primary care provider of women, but I know that, you know, they tend to prefer not to be. So we just didn't include them.
Okay, thank you. Any further questions? Well, thank you very much.
Certainly.
We move on then to a discussion of health agency budget. And Mr. Jeff Hamm.
Good evening. I'm really here primarily to respond to whatever questions the commission has. Nothing has changed in the last month. So the recommended budget, I think, is available. I saw copies of it upstairs this afternoon. We haven't seen ours yet. But the recommended budget for the health agency and its fund centers individually is the same as we reported to you last month. So I think you decided you wanted to re-agendize it this evening so that you could ask further questions, or if you chose to take some action in terms of taking a position on a particular thing associated with the budget, you'd have the opportunity to do that. So.
Yes, after we decide if we're going to say something specifically about the budget as presented, I wanted to see if anyone wanted to discuss the topic of getting more revenue. So, but I think we need to deal with, you know, what are we going to do on the budget itself first.
Yes, I guess I should jump in here. Because it was our committee, the budget committee, that was had asked Mr. Hamm to give us the report originally. And I think the purpose of this agenda item is simply to see if there is any interest among commissioners to take a formal action at this time. So that's what's open for discussion at this point. If you have any questions as to why we should or shouldn't, speak now. Mm-hmm. It doesn't appear that anybody. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, I am interested in. I believe it was a clerical position that tracked the immunizations, and so we were just talking here about the importance of immunizations in our population. And I'm just wondering, the way I understood it from reading about it last time, there were certain clerical hours assigned to track the immunizations, and between the public health department and the school system. Is that correct? And then that person, if that person's hours are cut, I'm just wondering, is it made up in another way? So the data itself isn't lost. That's my only concern.
I was just going to ask if you were referring, if you, I don't know if you have access to the materials that we distributed last month that has the itemized cut list. The item number 29 on our list was a loss of a patient services rep position in our immunization program. And we did include the characterization of the implications of that, which do you have a copy of it before you, or do you? Because I do, but you're probably more qualified to characterize it than I am. But we did talk about the background and history associated with that position. I just want to make sure if that's what you're talking about.
It sounds like it is. I'm sorry, I don't have it with me.
It will reduce the participation among the medical community in the statewide immunization registry. We believe it will.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the impact of the loss of funding for this position.
And is this a full, is it a full-time position or several hours? Or
it's a full-time position.
Yeah. Well, I think that's worth fighting for myself. I mean, I don't really have the full context, you know, of how the operation, you know, of the entire department and how this seems, you know, in perspective to that, but to me it sounds important to track immunizations to keep up with the statewide database and to input this information so it's not lost. I don't think you can go back and get it, can you?
How was that going to be mitigated? Was there a plan to cover that?
No. This is the state has reduced their funding for this registry support statewide. Immunization registries nationally have been in process for nearly 20 years now, and various states are in better shape than others. California has been slowly and steadily moving forward toward what they hope to have been a statewide registry. Right now, we have regional systems, so the plan was to build these regional systems into a comprehensive statewide system, and I think in the foreseeable future, that is simply not going to happen, so that if you lived in San Luis Obispo County for the first 10 years of your life and then went to get your adolescent immunizations in San Francisco, they're not going to have that information. If you went to Ventura, they would. But our ability to maintain the kind of technical outreach, educational support for the private sector, inclusive of community health centers, which is one of our big providers for childhood immunizations, will be eliminated with this reduction. That's not to say that pediatricians offices that have already adopted the use of this technology will not continue, but there is a lot of front office level turnover and ongoing needs for training. So it remains to be seen what the actual effect will be on our population. But it's reasonable to expect that the completeness and the, in addition,
to maintain.
much like
changed. Like what we've you can't. Community. Bifurcated. Less robust. wanted to.
Hope that you
your position.
And
the medic.
informed about that. And months. sharing. Look at employer. And also benefits. Benefit. That is definitely. That healthy. Federal. federal. Through the
about half. Curious because that
on the number.
Update.
May the 6th.
Okay,